Today's the 22nd.
Today is the 22nd.
Okay, yeah. Just wanting to be sure. That was a question. It wasn't a statement. And we're back again. Paul and Gordon, and Shirley's around. And last night we left off at a pretty good leaving off place for where we were at the end of the Chief of Party years. And did you think of anything after we turned off the tape last night that might have applied to that time?
Not really, no.
Okay.
No. We could leave that. And then maybe I could just briefly discuss the illness that I had.
Yeah, because we got Pauline by the fingernails there, right on the cliff's edge, and you know that's where we left the listener with it. Yeah, because you got sick coming back home on the plane.
Coming back home on the plane, yeah. Really a bad case of hepatitis, and I didn't realize what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And my idea of dealing with sickness always had been to just work it off.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I thought it was just a flu of some kind or a bug, stomach bug of some kind, and just keep on going.
Because after all, in Vietnam, you must have gotten diarrhea maybe once.
Yeah.
So you may have a dim memory of what that was like, so this is no different, right?
Yeah. Why don't you shut it off just a minute?
Oh, God, embarrassing story, huh?
It's
on again. And before we go on with the airplane, let me just step back a bit. Because this is a health problem, and for volunteers, when you were chief of party, what did you do about the health for volunteers? Was there any emergencies or that anybody had?
I can't think of any real emergencies. So
it was a small group, and they were in the rural area,
yeah,
so that was
so
probably.
So apparently, we. We didn't have any because it would stay with me, but I can remember a number of them getting hepatitis and malaria.
Oh, really?
And hepatitis was not that big a thing. We had a Seventh-day Adventist hospital right close to where we lived in Saigon, and they would go in there for a week or two, and then. Rest and slowly get back to it.
And they had gamma globulin shots.
They had gamma globulin, yes.
Yeah.
So there were the illnesses that are quite common to people in that area, but there were no accidents that I can remember.
Well, that was
like
fortunate.
In Laos, you know, Larry Elsucker lost his leg,
yeah,
and things like that, which was quite a serious accident. But,
sure.
And in Cambodia, a guy got killed.
On the job,
Marty Klisch. But
well, that was in an airplane crash.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, we had people killed in Vietnam later on.
Too. Later, yeah.
But during the time I was there, no.
Yeah.
But we did have pretty good. Health facility there with the Adventists, and they had the Filipino nurses.
Operation Brotherhood?
Yeah, that's right, Operation Brotherhood. And I can remember having had my shots locally here from an old doctor, and how they all these shots hurt so badly,
I
went through the line, and these nurses would kind of be flirting with you and talking, and you'd ask them, well, aren't you going to give me a shot? And they'd, oh, we already gave you one. Get on, you know.
They were so good.
They were so good. They really were good, you know. Bing, bang, bong, and the shot was done. So, but anyway.
And I thought of something else, too. It's kind of on the same line.
Uh-huh.
It's not physical health. It's mental health. Did you ever have to pack anybody and send them back home because they couldn't adjust?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't necessarily want a name, but,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, we had one.
And it's not because they weren't doing the job. It's just they were going a little bit...
Well, this was a case of somebody that should never have been sent out.
Oh, okay. So it was job performance related.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And had...
Some mental problems?
Yeah. Somebody that was not really suited to this kind of work, and it didn't take very long to determine that after he got out there.
Yeah.
And I think it was a case of the office in Washington feeling that the guy needed something like this to get on with his life because he'd had a lot of problems,
mm-hmm.
and taking a chance on him.
Yeah.
And it didn't.
So this case, it didn't pay.
Work, no.
Yeah. No, it's just
so, yes, that was very difficult. That was very difficult. But outside of that one case. During the time when I was in charge of the team, we didn't have a lot of problems.
Yeah. Well, I ask you this because we had occasionally people in the Philippines,
yeah.
who, just by culture shock and just,
yeah.
you know, feeling of being foreign and alienated,
yeah.
would lose their mental stability.
Yeah.
And they would have to be sent home on a medical evacuation,
yeah.
in quotation marks, but it's not anything physical.
Yeah.
And I think they probably, once they got home, they were okay.
Yeah.
But it's clear that they were just losing sense of reality,
yeah.
when they were there, sometimes very severely.
Yeah.
And I asked the first couple of people I asked when I interviewed folks, I said, did anything like that happen? They said, well, never. I said, well, wait a minute.
uh-huh.
It has to be. So I've been...
Yeah.
You know, just confirming with a couple of other people and not
yeah.
necessarily trying to embarrass anybody by digging up names or anything, but
yeah.
the phenomenon.
Yeah, when I was with IVS Washington, I got into more of that.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You know, so...
And not just from Vietnam.
No.
Yeah.
No. In fact, we had to bring home somebody who attempted suicide.
Ooh.
So that was one of the worst
yeah.
cases.
Yeah. Was that Vietnam or was that some of the...
It was Vietnam, yes.
Yeah.
You know, that was in, you know, some tough times there.
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm sorry to interrupt
yeah,
your,
it's okay.
Your enjoyable experience on the plane.
So with this hepatitis, I just kept on going. We kept on traveling, and finally I couldn't go anymore, and entered a clinic in Rome, a Catholic run clinic there, and Shirley and the children left by air,
mm-hmm.
to the States, and I spent 2 weeks in the clinic there, and then traveled home, felt that I was 100%. Picked up a car. We had ordered a VW Beetle in Europe. Had it shipped. We were going to tour Europe as a family.
But that was out?
That was out. Had it shipped to New York. Had to wait there for the car, living on hamburgers and french fries. Good diet for a hepatitis recovery. had no money to speak of.
Yeah.
Spent about a week there waiting for my car to get cleared.
Mm-hmm.
And then drove nonstop from New York to Freeman.
Mm-hmm.
When I got here, I had a relapse.
I bet you did.
Down a couple more weeks. Felt pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And started helping my dad with the corn harvest. Going pretty good. Did a little pheasant hunting. Another relapse. So the doctor finally told me, if you don't stay down, you won't live to be beyond 35.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to just stay on your back. So here I was with young family, no money, no job, and on my back.
How long for?
About a year.
That long?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. So about this was year. This was a stronger strain than most of the boys would pick up.
Well, the fact that I had the relapses.
Oh, that's it.
Is what did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think the strain was that bad. It was just that every relapse caused more deterioration. And
probably broke down the immunity more and more too.
Yeah. So I was down for about a year, and we were here.
Mm-hmm.
My dad moved to town. My folks moved to town.
Mm-hmm.
My dad came out and did a few chores. Shirley did some chores. And I was basically down.
Mm-hmm.
Not feeling that bad, but just in bed. Did a lot of reading.
Mm-hmm.
More reading than any other year of my life. Got a call from IVS Washington.
Yeah, because there's this gap between 61 and 62, so that's your sick time.
Yeah, that's my sick time.
Mm-hmm. When did you finish up in 61?
In June.
In June, okay, that's right, because you started at about July or so of...
Yeah, the
57, you know.
No, January of 57.
Oh, that's right, but then you had the home leave, so you were kicked back.
Yeah, I stayed on maybe a little bit past the 2 years.
Yeah.
I got a call from IVS Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Telling me that they needed some help in the office there. They had made a change. The old executive secretary had retired.
Nofsinger?
Nofsinger had retired. A new man came in, kind of in an interim basis, Glenn Riddell.
Mm-hmm.
They had heard, I guess, through the grapevine that I was having health problems and probably was going to have a difficult time on the farm. And in fact, the doctor said, you'll never farm again.
Oh, he was wrong, wasn't he?
He was wrong. Physically, he said, you're going to have to find something else to do. It was...
And maybe at that point, he was absolutely right.
Yeah, I think so. Amazingly, the recovery I made was complete.
Yeah.
And I've never had any problems since.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had my liver checked. Okay, you know, from time to time, just to be sure.
Sure.
And everything's fine.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, it looked like I would have some permanent damage.
Yeah.
And maybe would go into cirrhosis or something like that eventually.
Yeah.
So it just seemed to be an answer to prayer that this opening came up.
Because at least it was a salary.
Yeah, it was a salary. It was a good salary.
Okay.
And a good job and
mm-hmm.
And something I felt I could do. And so we moved to Washington. Oh, I wonder if it wasn't about May, June of 61.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you have 62 here.
62. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Left Vietnam. Well, I'd have to look back on to be sure about the dates.
Well, we don't have to get too precise,
yeah.
But you know, just as long as we're in a year ballpark, yeah.
Yeah. And I worked there first as personnel officer.
What did that mean?
Recruiting.
Oh, recruitment.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
So
you're the guy responsible. Okay.
Yeah. traveled to universities throughout the United States.
How would you make your choices about which places you would go?
Because
there's hundreds of universities all over, more than you could get to.
I hit land-grant universities in all the state, or in many of the states.
Yeah.
Because of their ag program and our need for agriculturally trained people.
Yeah.
Then I would hit some of the church schools, especially those from the Anabaptist background, like the Mennonite and the Church of the Brethren.
Quaker schools.
Quakers. Then it depended what we were looking for. If we were looking for rural development people, I would check into different programs that had that kind of background.
Rural sociology departments and things like that.
And I would go also to places where we had contacts. And at that time, we had, we had on the board, we had a guy from Cornell, we had a guy from Ohio State, head of the, Ag Econ department, I believe it was, at Ohio State. And we had a guy on the board at Tuskegee, hit some of the black schools in the South.
How was your response there?
Not great. Not great. But we did get some good, really good people out of some of those schools.
Why wasn't it great, do you think?
I don't know.
Okay.
Just by response, you mean...
their interest as well as desire to volunteer?
Oh, I think their interest was there.
Okay.
In a number of cases. But we didn't draw a lot of volunteers until we started to recruit for some of the African programs. Liberia.
Okay.
There was more interest there.
They
could identify more with going to Liberia. The response. You know, at any of the schools, it really varied. You would talk to I got to talk to a number of classes through contacts.
Through the contacts, yeah. Yes.
Somebody would be a professor, and he had some connection with IVS, or with me personally.
Right.
And he'd let me talk to the class. And a lot of the time, they could not really understand why they should be going overseas and doing something like that. Although the certainly the Peace Corps.
By then it was up and running.
Yeah.
So it was a popular idea.
That was a way for me to plug in.
How did you differentiate yourself?
Kind
of pitch the program, to use marketing talk.
Well, we were the prototype for the Peace Corps.
Yes.
IVS was a prototype for the Peace Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And I would explain that. I would say that we're not as closely tied to directly tied to the U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
We were a private agency, although we had contracts with the government.
Right.
We were not part of the government. That had some appeal.
Okay.
We were a smaller group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we didn't. We were. We could custom make the jab. It wasn't kind of mass production at that time. Peace Corps was. Really going for numbers.
I know.
So that had some appeal. We had religious or spiritual motivation in the organization.
Although not, as you said, proselytizing.
No. But there the certainly among the Anabaptist people, the service motivation is very strong, and and it's tied to their religious background.
Oh, that I understand.
And in those schools, it was, I think, easier to for them to understand what the difference was, and that's why I think percentage-wise we drew quite a number of people from there.
You also had a lot of faculty contacts, too.
Yeah.
I've talked to some people who were urged by their professors to give this a consideration.
Yes.
Even though the professors themselves had not been volunteers.
Yeah.
But they were teaching at, you know, whatever school.
Yeah.
Whether it's Goshen College or any one of the others.
Yeah.
And they'd say, hey, Steve, come here. Have you thought about this? You know.
Yeah. You, for example, you had mentioned interviewing Gene... Willie Myers.
Right, and, I'm going to be getting to you. Yeah.
And Gene Salsfus. Well, I can remember recruiting those two.
Those two,
Yeah. I can't remember if it was out of Goshen or Bluffton or where, but I recruited a lot of the people that went out to Vietnam, Laos, and Cambodia during those early 60s.
Well, that's why many people
60s.
Told me about you know. Even though you would be a mention at the beginning, you'd be one of the first people that they would actually associate with the organization.
Yeah.
So that's why your name would come up many times, even though you were only chief of party for 20 people.
Yeah.
I guess it's this recruiting. Now, now it clicks with me that it's recruiting.
And then
associated you in the minds with many of the volunteers who came afterwards.
And then when we would prepare to send teams out, I sort of was in charge of the orientation of getting them into Washington and
making all the travel arrangements and such.
Making the travel arrangements and going through the several days of orientation that we had in Washington for them.
Or Harper's Ferry.
Harper's Ferry, that's right. I was there when we began Harper's Ferry.
Was that your idea to develop Harper's Ferry?
I'll take some of the credit, I guess, but it was not, you know...
Not an individual thing.
No, I think it was kind of the group of people that were there who explored different possibilities and somehow got to talking to the manager of that hotel and felt that would be really a nice setting, and it did work out very well. When we went out, we did not have any prior orientation, and that was one thing that I felt very strongly the groups needed.
For what reasons?
Oh, just to have a little better idea of what to expect when you got there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we went out very, very naively, very cold as to what we were going to get into, and by correspondence, and in those days telephones weren't used near
now it's just we live with something to our ear.
and it's hard to believe, but in those days if I would have ever called my parents on the phone, they would have thought this is really
a tragedy. Oh my God, he's calling, something bad must have happened. It's like the telegram that comes.
And it was the same thing with IVS Washington in those years. There was, I won't say there wasn't any telephone communication. That's, I'm talking now about the time when we went out.
Yes.
But that changed somewhat until the time that I was recruiting. Then we were using the phone a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
But we were also bringing people in, and by using the telephone, by bringing people in, and having a interaction with them, a little role playing, and having some people returned volunteers scheduled to speak to them.
As well as yourself.
As well as myself and some others in the office there that have mm-hmm. been overseas. It gave them a much better idea of what they were getting into.
At least some idea.
Some idea, yeah.
Yeah, I've talked to some people and they... I think they were appreciative of the of that experience at Harper's Ferry.
Yes.
Or Harper's Ferry. I almost said Harper's Valley. I said, no, that's wrong. But I think it was so brief and that it was so new to them that a lot passed in one ear and out the other. And so it was maybe there latently to be recalled, but not at the time. It wasn't, you know, up there. And a lot of people thought that maybe the purpose of the Harper's Ferry was to build social cohesion because that's what happened. But apparently that wasn't necessarily a prime goal for you.
No.
It was to give them a background so they wouldn't be completely overblown as soon as they arrived there.
Yeah. And I would say compared to some of the orientation that Peace Corps volunteers got, it was very minimal.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I mean our orientation. Compared to the Peace Corps orientation.
Yeah, we had 2 months, for my group, we had 2 months in Hawaii and 1 month in the Philippines.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, that was language mixed with culture, mixed with tech, you know, et cetera, et cetera, but.
And we could argue or discuss for a long time how much orientation was necessary, but we won't do that.
I didn't need that much. I didn't need that much. But it was great.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun, but it wasn't really needed.
Yeah. Anyway, I don't know when the change happened, but we then moved up in Washington as program director from personnel. The title was personnel officer, then to program, either program officer or program director.
So would you say, though, that it was about a year that you did the program?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, personnel.
Personnel,
about a year.
First year.
Because it sounds like doing all those things, making all those college visits, setting up Harper's Ferry, doing that, recruiting people, et cetera, et cetera, would take it at least a good
year.
Yeah,
I would think so.
Yeah.
And then as program officer, then I began to make trips abroad.
As well.
And worked on developing programs. A little bit. Worked with Aid Washington on writing contracts.
Oh, okay.
That sort of thing.
What would that entail? Writing a contract?
Setting forth some of the responsibilities that IVS would bring to the arrangement and their commitments to IVS.
In return. And then
The financial sum that that they would contribute, would list the number of people, maybe the location within the country.
How specific?
Not too specific.
Just within this province, we will attempt to target seven volunteers in this
and
province.
The objective in a vague sense, the major objectives. Any kind of support that they would give us, and any kind of stipulations that we had. Then there was always clauses in there about religious proselyzing and political involvement and this sort of thing.
It'd probably be pretty general with government contracts.
I think so. Let's see, where was I? Lost my train of thought.
Well, okay. I'm going to keep you on the contract for just a second, a second longer at least.
Okay.
I know that when you were When you were chief of party, you were talking about maintaining the integrity of the of IVS as distinct from AID. Was that reflected in any of these contract sessions?
Yeah.
How would that be reflected?
Well, to write into the contract the stipulations or the factors of giving IVS as much autonomy in the program as we could
mm-hmm.
as we could get. And the contract always involves negotiation, and
sure.
You wanted to get all their money and no,
you know. I understand horse trading.
From our point of view, we wanted them to give us all the money possible and all the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
And from their point of view, as little. It depended who you worked with. Some of the people that I worked with in the contract office were, very easy to work with.
Uh-huh.
And others, it was very laborious.
Yeah.
You can imagine.
Much like anything with personalities.
Yeah. You had bureaucrats in there that just. This is the way
it is. Read the rule book that was bigger than the phone book.
This is the way it is, and this is the way we'll write it. And we said, well, we've been there, and this is the way we want it. And
this is the way we've done it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. this is the way we operate. And if you want us, this is it. So, mm-hmm. but yes, we would try to write that into the contract, a mm-hmm. certain amount of autonomy that. Would give our people as much freedom of operation as we could have.
What kind of specifics for autonomy? Just as examples,
because
autonomy can mean anything.
Control by the chief of party to make decisions for the team. That was one very important factor.
Decisions is about what?
Moving people.
Oh, site assignments.
Yes, working with various government entities.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions on volunteers, for example.
Who would become an IVS volunteer and who would not?
Yeah. Now the chief of party had the authority
mm-hmm.
to approve a volunteer for that country or for that location.
Yeah.
Aid would often want to have veto rights, if you will,
uh-huh.
on the volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something we would negotiate. Sometimes we would accept it as a kind of, veto, but not involved in the decision. Other places, we would try, in all cases, we would try to have them accept whoever we selected.
Uh-huh.
And that was kind of a thing to negotiate. And as IVS built credibility, that was easier to get.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you send good people out and they know it, they're not so concerned.
Yeah.
But if they're
not familiar. If you have a string of bad ones, then...
Exactly.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. I don't know that I can think of a lot of specifics, but...
that one example is pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, but without that kind of example, I wasn't exactly sure. Was there a big difference in the contracts that were signed at the Washington level for the programs in Vietnam versus the programs in Laos?
I can't really recall.
Okay.
There probably was, but...
Some specifics, yeah. I wasn't sure if there was a great deal of difference between the two.
I can't really recall, and I guess the contract writing was not my cup of tea. I mean, mm-hmm. it was not something I really enjoyed doing. And
no, I could tell.
You know, but I got into it. And,
yeah, had to.
Yeah, did it.
Okay.
But it, for me, the it was much more enjoyable writing out the program, you know, and
visiting the country and
going
setting something up.
Visiting the country and traveling out, looking the area over, and getting together with local authorities, and the if we already had a team out there with the IVS people and the AIDS people, and writing up a program to expand in the area,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or as happened in the case of some countries, to go out there and just send out a new team into that country.
Yeah.
That was very enjoyable.
Yeah.
And then when you finally got to the nitty-gritty of the contract.
The devil in the details, huh?
You kinda,
the interest wanes, and the lawyers have to come out.
I
understand that. Okay, I know I interrupted your conversation when I got you back to the contracts and the specifics, and I'm sorry about that, but I did want to ask that.
But and then I would I would spend, I suppose, half time traveling.
Mm-hmm.
In the recruiting job as well as in the program. Responsibility. More than half time in the recruiting, I'm sure.
Even though you were program officer or director?
No, that was prior to that.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, just as opposed to staying in Washington, in both jobs.
In both jobs.
Personnel.
Okay, yeah.
And this program, a lot of it was traveling.
Yeah.
And my health just kept getting better and better.
Despite the travel, which can be tiring. I mean, I feel
but
like
I
just
did,
going.
I did watch my diet, and any alcohol consumption, anything like that for a full year, and then had a checkup, and everything was clean. So after that, it was pretty much normal. I also had a stretch in there as acting executive director.
As well?
Yeah. And I should mention something about the... shortly before I joined IVS Washington, they recruited a man by the name of Russell Stevenson as IVS executive
officer. The name is familiar,
And he was a...
This is to follow Nofsinger?
Yes. And there was a man in there as an intern.
Between Nofsinger and...
Yeah, Glenn Riddell.
Yeah, you mentioned his name already.
And then when I came in, this is the way it was. When I came in, then I was a personnel officer. Glenn Riddell was program officer.
Right. Oh, okay.
And Russell Stevenson was executive.
Came in as executive, and Riddell had gone from acting down to
program.
Okay.
That's right. And then when Riddell retired, he was an older man. He had worked for AID. He did a lot of the contract work prior to my involvement with him.
Of course.
And went with his turf. Yes, and he had set up the prototype so that it was easy for me to follow that. That was was a, really a good contribution on his part.
I'm sure that it was. Yeah,
because he had worked for aid in Indonesia, and I think he had some maybe some Washington aid experience. He was a very experienced man and a very good man for the organization, and Dr. Stevenson as well, just a tremendous guy. Okay.
Should we pause this for a bit?
Yeah,
all right. Okay.
I wanted to mention a little about Russell Stevenson, Dr. Stevenson.
Yeah, you were.
Because I think his role with IVS was major.
Because I hear a lot about Nofsinger.
Yes, Nofsinger's was, because he was there initially.
He was the first, so he gets the thing running.
Especially the old timers like us, he was IVS.
And a very fond memory.
Yes. But Russell Stevenson was also a visionary, and he had good ideas. He was very talented person. He had worked for the was it Ford Foundation or Rockefeller? Do you remember one? He had quite a bit of foundation experience. I can't remember whether it was Ford or I think it was Rockefeller Foundation. And he certainly brought to IVS a kind of expertise that we needed.
In what way? What do you mean?
Well, he began some of the private fundraising for IVS.
Okay. Was that a deliberate attempt to wean yourself away from AID contracts?
Not so much to wean ourselves away from it, but to have another option.
Okay.
To maybe supplement in ways,
okay,
and to also I think give us some security, because we knew that at any point of time the government funds could diminish or
right.
So. Stevenson was a very personable sort of guy, and made a very good impression, I think, personally, with in representing IVS. And of course, the executive director has a big role to play in that regard. He was a people person that got along well with volunteers, as well as with any dignitaries or anybody that he had dealings with. So he was a sort of person that IVS volunteers were very proud to identify with. And certainly in my working with him, he had a lot of influence on me. I would say that he was certainly a role model for me. And influenced me in many ways. So I think personally, and also IVS as an organization, he was a very key figure. And he's somebody you maybe should interview.
He's still around?
Yeah, he's still around. He's retired, and he's
lives
in North Carolina now.
He does.
Oh, well, you know, we were given some information about the volunteers, but that doesn't always mean that the staff is going to be on the list. So, you know, let me take a quick peek. I don't know where they have them, because this is for both Laos and Vietnam, but of course, Stevenson, right? S-T-E-V-E-N-S-O-N?
Yes.
And he's not mixed in with the Vietnam ones, and then the only other possibility is they're with this Laos group. If I could get his address from you, I'd appreciate it. You know,
yeah.
And a phone number too, if possible, but
yeah,
at least an address.
Charlie?
Yeah.
you want to just jot that down on a piece of paper and address and phone number?
Yeah.
We're still in contact with him, you know.
Really?
Christmas time, and he's been out at the farm here.
Oh,
okay. And we visited him. They had a kind of an acreage in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
And what did he work for? After he left IVS, he got a job with IDC, International Development Corporation. Kind of higher level.
Mm-hmm.
Agency working abroad. By higher level, I mean sending out the PhD
mm-hmm.
to a country to do some research and giving them
someone who had
grants.
Been a city planner here would send them up
probably,
to Nairobi
yeah.
or someplace
yeah,
to help city
yeah,
planning there.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he had some connections also with the World Bank.
Mm-hmm.
But he moved on from IVS then.
Well, you know, I didn't even think about him. I mean, we're going to try to, say, interview Tony Lake and some of the
mm-hmm.
more recent directors.
Yeah.
But I guess Peters had also been for a short time,
yeah,
right?
Dick
yeah,
Dick Peters.
Dick
mm-hmm.
Peters, I mean,
yeah.
Mark has already seen him.
Uh-huh.
But just the earlier directors, I assumed
uh-huh.
that they did the IVS work at the end of another career
uh-huh.
and that they already might have been in their 60s
yeah.
and would now most likely
yeah.
not be around any longer.
Yeah.
So this is
well,
wonderful.
He's got to be well up in age, but he's certainly still very sharp.
Yeah, and he would not have been already at retirement
no.
age when you knew him. So
no,
I say
no. He only retired, fairly recently.
But he's not in North Carolina anymore.
Oh, he isn't.
He's in Ohio.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
well,
that's
right.
Okay.
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 Where in Ohio?
Waverly, Ohio.
I know that.
Okay. But when he left then, I replaced him as the acting executive director.
So how long were you in that position?
Maybe 6 months.
That's a fairly good stretch.
Yeah. And in fact, was offered the job.
Mm-hmm.
Permanently.
Really? Didn't want it?
No. In the meantime, I had made a trip to Algeria
mm-hmm.
To set up an IVS program there.
Right.
And just fell in love with the country
mm-hmm.
and the program.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were working on the and also with the
there's no phone for him?
Okay.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Just directory assistance.
That'll
sure,
probably get him.
I'm sure
yeah.
he's got a phone.
Yeah.
So the embassy there asked whether I would consider coming to Algeria as the aide liaison officer.
Mm-hmm,
to the IVS
mm-hmm.
group, and it really appealed to me,
mm-hmm.
and so I felt that was something I would rather do.
Mm-hmm.
We were kind of interested in going abroad again, and it was a good opportunity.
So you did this trip while you were acting director because you also had to continue your program
yeah.
director activities.
Yes.
I mean, acting executive director, because you
yeah.
were continuing the program. Okay.
And
was that about when? About 64, something like that? Maybe
65? 65.
65, okay.
Yeah. Well, I was probably out there in 64. We left in 65
mm-hmm.
for Algeria. And
about when in the year?
Early in the year.
Mm-hmm.
February, maybe.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. Now we had, at that time, we had the three children. And then the last one, Suzanne, was born in Algeria.
So you were really with IVS Washington for about 2 years or a little
three.
More? 62, mid-year, until 63, and then 63 to 64,
65.
Until into 65. So yeah, about 2.5.
Probably. Yeah.
Going on to
yeah.
3. All right. Yeah.
The appeal that Algeria had for us was, I mean, we enjoyed the country. Or this in my trip out there, I really enjoyed the country. I also felt they had a very good aid contingent there.
Uh-huh.
And it was not a mission, it was just an aid affairs office.
Mm-hmm.
And there were about three, four people there. There was an aid liaison officer, there was a controller, a secretary, and somebody working with in the general area of rural development. And so and they were all working out of the embassy.
Mm-hmm.
And felt that the people there had a very good concept of what a group like IVS could do. And so the program appealed to me, and I thought the aid group there and the embassy people I had met were people that I would enjoy working with.
Mm-hmm.
A little different experience, be on a government level, and was interested in giving that a try. So that's why I left IVS. I was somewhat, I don't know if overwhelmed is the word, probably by the responsibility also of the job.
Especially, you mean as acting director or just the program director?
No. When they offered me the job as executive director,
mm-hmm.
I didn't have any problem with whether I could do it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I have very good support from the IVS board, and I had come up through the ranks, and I knew pretty well all the ins and outs of IVS, from a volunteer to the executive director job.
Yeah.
But just the pressure, the stress of recruiting, I mean, being ultimately responsible of whoever gets sent where.
Yeah.
And especially as security became worse,
mm-hmm.
sending people out to Vietnam.
Yeah, especially by 63, 64, yeah.
I guess I was hesitant to continue with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I had trouble sleeping and, you know, things like that. It bothered me. And I think that was... I didn't want to take on the responsibility full time.
Yeah. Had there been any deaths in either Laos or Vietnam during the time when you were at IVS Washington?
Yes. Well, of course, Marty Klisch.
Okay.
Was during that time.
Of course, that was just simply an accident,
that was
which
an accident.
Could happen anywhere.
It could, but still.
Or at least I don't think the plane was shot down.
No. That was strictly
it was strictly an accident.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sometimes
you'd never know.
Yeah.
Could have been.
IVS. I don't think so. In the time
when you were there.
Yeah. Although people that I recruited.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little hard for me to remember whether it was at the time when I was there
or a little bit later.
A little bit later.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah.
Because
yeah.
like Mike Benz, who was POW,
mm-hmm.
I recruited him, and
mm-hmm.
I can remember very, very well the visit I had with him encouragement I gave him to go to Vietnam.
He later was a POW?
Uh-huh. Mike Benji.
Yeah, was he one of those picked up in Hue during the Tet Offensive, or was this some other time?
It was another time.
And another time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Was that for very long that
yes.
he was held?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. One of the longest.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if we're in contact with him.
Hmm.
I hope we are.
Yeah.
So that was kind of almost too much responsibility, in a sense, and.
Well, it was just a. It wasn't the fact that I was afraid whether I could handle the responsibility or not. It was just the fact that I at that age and that point in my life, I didn't want to take it on. Especially with this other opportunity that was more appealing to me.
Yeah, something when you see something,
yeah,
you're
and I
kind of in love with the country anyway.
Yeah, and the chance to work with IVS from the other side,
mm-hmm.
and for them it'd be very good because they would know that the aid liaison person had their interests in mind.
Was sympathetic at least, yeah.
And the embassy there and the aid affairs officer wanted that sort of arrangement, and so it was kind of an appealing move for me.
That makes a great deal of sense.
Yeah.
Let me take you a step back to, I guess, your program director stuff, particularly setting up the education programs,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because even though you were an Aggie, those programs were really started
mm-hmm.
about the time
mm-hmm.
that you were
mm-hmm.
in IVS Washington, so you would have been either recruiting for those programs
mm-hmm.
or later getting the contract
mm-hmm.
signed
mm-hmm.
for those programs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you wouldn't have signed the first contracts for those programs. They probably were done before you got there, weren't they?
Yeah. And even...
That would have been Rudell that would have set those up.
I think Russell Stevenson had the most influence on those programs.
Okay.
Even after I came there and was program director,
mm-hmm.
as executive director, he dealt more with the education teams, setting them up, and I did more with the ag and rural development.
Okay.
Although I did recruit for the education teams very definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And the orientation and so forth, but. I don't remember making any field visits where I did the program development on the education teams. Either that had been set up before and we were just in the expanding phase, or Dr. Stevenson continued to handle those as executive director. Because there was overlap in our work in Washington.
And if you're a small enough organization,
yeah.
it's not like you have turf problems
or things like that. No. Even as program director, I did some personnel work, and personnel
yeah.
director did some program work. And,
I mean, if you're going to fly off
yeah.
somewhere, you could drop on a campus
sure.
or two.
Yeah. yeah. So there was considerable overlap.
Uh-huh.
But, yeah, I remember doing quite a bit of recruiting for the
mm-hmm.
education team.
So even though, let me follow up just a bit, and again,
mm-hmm.
you may not know because
mm-hmm.
you weren't as much involved in that,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just going to find out. I was wondering where the impetus for the education programs came, whether it was something that AIV turned to IVS
mm-hmm.
and said, we'd like to go beyond agriculture, we want to start education, can you supply
mm-hmm.
people? Or if it came as an idea out of IVS, you know, IVS going off to AID with this notion, whether that was, whether if that was IBS Washington or IBS Saigon or IBS Vientiane.
Yeah, as I remember it, it came from Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And from Laos. It came from the country, too.
Okay.
It did not come from IBS Washington, and it did not come from AID Washington.
So it came from both Saigon and Vientiane at about the same time?
I think the Laos one came first,
okay.
If I remember right.
Oh, okay.
I think that one came first. But I you'd have to check that. I'm not positive on that.
Yeah, that's easy enough. I mean, there are annual reports that show when a program starts, and you know, if
I can remember in my early recruiting days.
Yeah.
For IBS Washington, I can remember recruiting for both the education program in Vietnam and also the one in Laos.
Okay.
And the big expansion on the Vietnam program came after I left.
Big expansion for what? For
education.
Yeah.
Okay. On the Vietnam program.
Yeah. That although the first volunteers were going over, and they were pretty much getting set up.
Oh, they were there.
Yeah. Yeah.
In fact, when I went out as program officer, the education program was the operative, because
mm-hmm.
I can remember my visit with Carl Stockton and some of the other people that were in the education program.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it was probably a very strong first contingent.
Very strong, yeah. Yeah. Anne Wright. You should interview her.
Is it Anne and Phil?
Oh, Anne Parsons. Anne Wright
Anne.
Parsons.
Okay, yeah.
Jay Parsons.
I missed. Let me just pause the tape here just for, well, no, it's almost out on this side, so I can run it down when I tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I missed her in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I might as well pause the tape. Anyway. Mm-hmm. No, I was.
Yeah, go ahead.
You know, I was just interested in where the impetus came. So it came from each of the individual countries.
Yeah, as far as I remember, it came from and there again, I don't know who the driving force was, whether it was the IVS group that was there, or whether it was AID, or whether it was the Vietnamese or the Lao government.
Now you tell me that Don Luce